I'm Danica Juarez.
And I'm Jan James.
And this is
How's It Hold Up?
Hi, I'm Danica.
And I'm Jan.
And I'm Valerie.
And today we watched a Disney Silly Symphonies cartoon called The Tortoise and the Hare from 1935. This short is based, of course, on the Aesop's fable of the same name. And as far as the plot synopsis goes, it follows the fable. It's about a tortoise and a hare having a race. The tortoise is slow and steady. The hare is really fast, but he's also cocky and overconfident. And so in this version specifically, he pretends to take a nap basically to mock the tortoise and then runs past him. But then he actually gets distracted by a group of bunny girls that are like, yoo-hoo at him. And he commences showing off to them for a long time, allowing the tortoise to take a lead. And when he goes back to try to beat the tortoise, confident in his abilities, he messed around so long that he ultimately can't get there in time, and the tortoise wins.
Yes.
Yep. Yes.
What do we think of this cartoon?
It was enjoyable. Some fun choices. It was good.
I enjoyed it more than I thought I was going to, because I did like the difference, the slightly different iteration and motivation and what he was doing to be distracted other than just falling asleep. Because to me, sorry, during a race that is not very long, that story always kind of bothered me, because I'm like, that seems like a really dumb thing to do.
It's just a way to highlight his overconfidence. I'm so confident I can win that I can take a nap in the middle of this.
Yeah. But so this was a less boring iteration of that.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. More action. Yeah, no, I like it. It's cute. It's not one of my favorites, but it's one of those that's never like annoying to rewatch, you know, like it's a solid cartoon. Let's get specific. The Tortoise and the Hare received an Academy Award for Best Animated Short for 1934. I have this in the 1935. I think it came out in like January. You know how award seasons can be a little not in the actual year. But anyways, it received the Best Animated Short, defeating Holiday Land with Scrappy and Jolly Little Elves, Charles Mintz and Walter Lantz's first cartoons in color, respectively. I think I watched Holiday Land and I didn't particularly care for it. And we watched Jolly Little Elves. Remember that one?
Yeah.
And I think it's safe to say this is better than Jolly Little Elves. Yeah, what do we think of the story and characters in here?
The other big difference, and I found interesting, is how much the little community around was involved. Like, it started off with everyone out to watch him, like, in stands, like bleachers. And you even had these two little skunks, kind of a cute little thing. One's waving their hat and drops and, you know, gets it. Just, it was cute, kind of little character bits.
You're going to mention the skunks and not mention that they're sitting on the bleachers completely alone on all sides.
No,
because there's a bunch of
true.
Space around
that is,
them.
That is yes. true. I didn't think about that. Kind of.
How did you not think about it? That was the main gag.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Oh, there was also, I don't know what was up with this, but a bird, I don't know if it was a stork or whatever, but one little bird was on a crutch. I don't know what was going on with that.
Yeah, I don't know.
And then somebody ran past him and he kind of like flipped over and had to get back up on his crutch. Kind of felt sorry for the bird on the crutch.
Yeah, I wonder what his story is.
Yeah, because he had a wrapped up little leg, so he somehow had hurt one of his legs.
What do we think about the tortoise and the hare, respectively, our two main characters?
The hare, he had his like signature laugh.
That
was a lot. But it was a good character building.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of
the
hair.
I feel like I did a pretty good mimicry there.
I was not a fan of the hair or his design, but I was very endeared to the tortoise. And I liked his little bowler hat, and I just liked his clunkiness. And it's just his little good nature, even with ribbing from the crowd and ribbing from the hair and stuff. He was a cool little dude.
Want to hear an interesting fun fact?
Sure.
This cartoon is believed to be one of the inspirations for Bugs Bunny years later, who first appeared in 1940.
I mean, fully could feel that. I don't know if it was like mannerisms or
Part of it is literally design in terms of early Bugs Bunny design is similar to Mac's hair. And yeah, part of it is just sort of the, I guess, the self-assurance and cockiness that obviously takes on a different flavor with Bugs compared to Max, where it's like a character flaw, whereas with Bugs, it's arguably a character strength.
Right.
But yeah, it's, you can see it, definitely.
Yeah, and I think a big part of that is who's the target.
Yes.
This, you know, slow and steady tortoise who you're being a jerk to for no reason. He's being very polite. Or somebody was rude to you first, or...
Or somebody who's literally trying to hunt you.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Yes. Even if they're also just as dumb as that turtle, they're less nice.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
But we'll get to Bugs Bunny one day. What'd you guys think about the bit of voice acting in this?
Yeah, I mean, it was a silly symphony, so there's a little bit of singing, I guess, too.
I don't know if I'd quite say that they're singing, but they're definitely talking in rhyme a lot.
Yeah.
Rhyme and like at a tempo kind of thing.
Yes, yes. It definitely had a tempo. The tortoise had a very obvious tempo. And then the hare was just like a storm coming through wherever he like ran.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a fun contrast.
What'd you think about the raccoon guy who sounds a lot like Grumpy from Snow White?
I was like, this guy sounds familiar, but I couldn't place it.
He sounds a lot like Grumpy from Snow White, and the reason is that he is voiced by Pinto Colvig, the same guy who voices Grumpy in Snow White.
Yeah.
And is also Goofy.
I'm trying to remember where was the raccoon guy?
He was the guy who started the race.
Oh, Dina, okay.
Yeah, because he shot the tortoise in the butt. He's like, go.
Okay, got it.
We can start going into animation some, and I want to, specifically with the raccoon, I like when he shot the gun, and then his little tail, like, spun like a barber pole or whatever. That was cute.
Yeah, and I did like, back to voice acting kind of more specifically, I did really like the matchup of the tortoise's voice. The hair was okay, just okay. It didn't necessarily stand out to me. I think...
The hair was Ned Norton and the tortoise was Eddie Holden.
Okay.
Which I think they were character actors of the day.
Well, I was just going to say, especially since you compared the hair to Bugs Bunny, I feel like Bugs Bunny's, whoever voices Bugs Bunny, that matches.
I love you very much, and I'm not actually upset, but wow, it's just like the worlds that we operate on for you to say whoever voices Bugs Bunny is like physically painful for me.
Sorry.
Like, huh. It's Mel Blanc. It's Mel Blanc who voices Bugs Bunny.
Okay,
please continue with your thought.
Okay, so I feel like Mel Blanc just matches that personality and attitude of Bugs Bunny so well. That kind of, again, cockiness, that self-assuredness, that scamp, that, just all of that.
It's going to really be so fun as we get to the lead up to Bugs Bunny, because there's a lot... There's several cartoons that have what are considered prototypes of Bugs Bunny before we actually get to the full-fleshed Bugs Bunny. And one of the biggest differences is some of the choices made for what he sounds like that are all still voiced by Mel Blanc, but take on a very different timbre that make him just less likable.
Yeah,
it'll be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, so in that sense,
I think Ned Norton does a good job in terms of sounding like a character that you think is a jerk.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And maybe less to his discredit, I just don't think the depth of character, was there because it's one note. It's just a jerk, someone I don't like. It's not,
Max Hare is not a nuanced character now.
Right,
he's very much just like a big flamboyant, like that. This is what he is. There's no other layers to peel back of Max Hare.
Yeah. Again, like, I really like the sound and the animation supporting, like, this character is a storm when he runs through. Like,
yeah.
He is a force. He doesn't care about whatever's around him. Like, property gets destroyed. People, like, get disheveled. And then when he tries to stop, you see his hands kind of flailing around before he, like, screeches to a halt.
This is such a wonderful segue. Let me give you another fun fact. The type of extraordinary velocity exhibited by Max Hare, in which he crosses the screen in less than a second, was a novel and important concept for animation. It influenced many studios to increase the timing in their gags. As a result, speed became an integral part of lauded series such as the Fleischer Popeye cartoons, Seamus Culhane's work at Lance, the Warner Brothers cartoons, and of course the Hanna-Barbera and Tex Avery units at MGM. So yeah, this is the way that it depicts speed, both in like the literal speed of the character, but in
the after effects
of it, like just drawing something in that way to really overemphasize a trait.
Yeah,
is a big influence.
No, you know? that's a really good point. I didn't think about the technique of it's like, yeah, he crosses the screen very quickly and without all of the other details. That could be boring, hard to kind of really communicate to the viewer, but you see the stuff, you see the aftermath, and that all like clicks together.
Yeah.
In a way that it's very clearly communicated. That's really interesting.
Beyond just showing the after effects of like people he's passing or property damage, the games that he played with to impress the bunnies, that was really neat because then on an intellectual or whatever mind level, because, you know, one of the first things is he shot an arrow and then he ran and he went in front of the target and put an apple over his head. And then the arrow came through, meaning he was faster than the arrow. And then, and then he played tennis with himself at one point. He played baseball with himself, you know, where he, you know, hit it. And then he was able to, to pitch the ball. Then he was able to go and hit it with the bat and then get to all the bases or catch it. At least caught it once. Yeah. And all of those things. So I'm, you know, you're kind of like, yeah. But again, because they had first established how fast and when he went past people and, you know, destruction to property, you know, you were kind of buying it, but then you were really wrapping your brain around, oh my gosh, this bunny is fast.
And it's really interesting to think about just how influential this is in terms of depicting characters that go fast. Because how many cartoons and other things have you seen where to exhibit that a character is really fast, they either play baseball or tennis with themselves?
Yes.
A lot. Like, I know Sonic has done that on multiple iterations, including, I think, the first live-action film, where he's, of course, an animated character. He's playing baseball with himself. Like, that's just, like, such a familiar iconography at this point. And this is, as far as I can tell, if not the first instance of it, certainly the most popular early instance of it.
That's neat. That's really neat to think of how influential this is. Wow.
Because, yeah, I mean, but that, what an interesting thing to do to really, again, you know, hit home the point, without being a pun, but really about how fast this person, this entity is. Yeah, more than it could depict by just seeing and dust fly up or whatever as they're running.
I also, in watching the tennis one especially, how it becomes so quick that it's literal. It spends time kind of showing him do the movement at first, but then it starts like cutting back and forth between him on either side to show the quickness. And I feel like that is, I can draw in my head at least a direct line from that to like Droopy Dog and Animaniacs and stuff just like appearing where they want to be next, and just like having this preternatural like cartoon speed or ability to just be where they want to be next, even if it doesn't logically make sense, that like it feels like this starts, you know, like it feels like most cartoons before this and even this in its lead into it needs to show how a character got somewhere, but like eventually you can get to the point where you're like, well, actually in this Looney Tunes cartoon, it was over here and the character turns to go away and then he's over here also because it's a cartoon and we don't have to follow the rules of reality in that way, which they obviously knew because there's a lot of other ways in which they aren't following the rules of reality in early cartoons. But a lot of it is more like, oh, stuff moves that isn't supposed to move and stuff like that, rather than thinking about how, like, cartoons don't have to logically flow in exactly the same way that reality does, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just interesting to see these early ideas take root through stuff like this.
Another neat thing they did with the tortoise is... I really liked how the tortoise was able to ride itself even when it was on its back.
Yes.
They did a lot of things with it extending its neck and it.
I don't know why you're saying it. It's he.
Okay, I'm so sorry.
It's just, yeah. Just weird. I know.
I don't know. I don't know why it's that. But where he would twist his neck, you know, kind of like a corkscrew or whatever, and then it would spin around. And he did that some things times with his tail. And I just like how they had him like popping out of his shell with his little legs and his tail and his head. And it was really cute. But how that would right him and help him get to where he needed to be,
yeah,
himself. That was neat.
Yeah, it makes him feel like a character who is his shell, and then he extends out of the shell rather than like a character wearing a thing, almost. Mm-hmm. You know, it's fun.
Yeah, I also liked how whenever he was on his back, I was like, oh no, how's he gonna get out of this one? Yeah. But then he extends his head to the hat that's spinning, and he uses the hat's momentum to twist him and pull him back up.
Yeah.
And there were other instances where, like you said, like he is his shell. So as he's running through, there's stuff above or below him, and he'll just retract into the shell with the shell carrying the momentum.
Oh, yes. Yes.
It's, you know, obviously not realistic, but very funny.
And it has its own, like, sense of logic to it. Cartoon, yes. Logic.
Yeah, at some point he extends his legs really long at the end, trying to get
there. Oh, yeah.
To give himself to bigger stride.
Yeah.
And he picked up his shell almost like you would pick up, like, a dress, like if you were running in a skirt.
Sure, yeah.
Or something, and you wanted to, yeah, he picked it up. That was so cute.
There were other good details in the beginning when the hare and the tortoise were coming out of their training areas. The hare had a really nice robe, and I think when he threw it, it hung up really nicely or something.
Yeah, and the thing, the belt, like, even, like, cinched to make it, like, have a really, like, shapely a boat, kind
yeah.
of thing.
Yeah, that's right. His robe kept his, like, form.
Yeah.
With, like, his chest out kind of thing. And the tortoise was, like, all patchwork. So there were good details in the beginning as well to kind of show their status, kind of who they are.
Shifting back a little bit to voice, one thing that I didn't think quite matched or maybe just was a disconnect for me is the rabbit girls, this rabbit school, they were sitting on, you know, on the wall when the hare came along. And I feel like they kind of presented them younger looking, which I was kind of like, ugh. But then their voices were very old and mature and sultry, almost like, you know, even beyond like a Betty Boop type vibe when they spoke. So that was, which matched more like, you know, I'm glad that he wasn't around little girls or something. That would have been creepy. But I just mean is the way the youth and the way they made them look, to me, didn't match the voice and how they acted as much.
I agree that they are, when I first saw them, it felt like they were younger than I think they were intended. And yeah, I wonder just if the design could have been changed a little bit. I guess it's unclear with how their designs compare to his and kind of the age that, like, what's the difference? What reads for the age?
Yeah, and I'm sure part of it is just the hair and the girls being designed by different people, too, and just mashing that together, you know? Because it's interesting how different animators are animating different parts. Like, I know that the early speed scenes we see of him is animated by one person, and then the scene we see at the end where the hare is, like, going real fast and, like, kind of lifting up into the air and stuff is animated by a different person. Mm. So they're, like, choosing to depict the speed kind of in different ways. And I think similar, that can happen with character designs of, like, hey, we need some girls in this scene. You design them. They need to be simplistic enough that you can, like, do four that mm-hmm. you are animating at the same time and stuff like that.
And it might have, you know, I think the size difference also didn't help because they had the girls so small, even though I know they were sitting on the wall, they seemed so small, you know, even not very, I mean, long arms or legs at all. And the hair, and I know hairs are supposed to be larger yeah. rabbits, but still just a huge
And also
huge
there's
difference.
Definitely a history of depicting guy animal characters as bigger than girls and stuff like that.
Yeah, but I think it, part of it could be rabbit versus hare.
Definitely.
And yeah. But I agree. I read them younger at first, and then they were talking and stuff, and it's like, oh, okay.
And I think it would all be a lot more uncomfortable because you'd have to think about it more clearly if he was ever, like, really trying to kiss them or anything like that.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But he's just, like, showing off to them. Yes. So you kind of just don't have to think about it that deeply. The main thing that I wanted to mention with sound design is kudos to the sound designer for that sound that it made as he went real fast.
Yeah.
That kind of like siren almost.
Yeah, siren. Like I thought it might be like a tornado like alert.
Siren kind of thing. Yeah, yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm. It's definitely in that range. Yeah. Let's go on to the part that our podcast is named after. How's it hold up? I feel like you guys already discussed this with the girls. I don't know what else there is to discuss here.
Yeah, I mean, I think that could be a thing that is brought up for sure.
Yeah, and just, again, is I think that would remove all doubt that they weren't too young of girls. Again, their voices made them not sound young. I just think they should. The size was just too different, and they just had them look too youthful.
But, yeah, anything else for this section offhand? I guess one of the interesting ways in which this ages is just Warner Brothers is going to make a Tortoise and the Hare also with Bugs Bunny. And I'm pretty sure that cartoon is much more well-remembered by people in general nowadays.
Mm, oh, okay.
So just in terms of being compared to something that comes like half or more a decade later and is more overtly comedic and sharper timing and stuff, like this maybe feels quaint in comparison, but put in its appropriate historical context, you know, it's a fun cartoon.
Speaking on that sharper timing, I guess story-wise it was maybe paced a bit weird. Like you have the intro and you see the other people in the race, like you see the other people and there looks like there's maybe races going on or something, but we never follow up with those, and that's fine. And then you have like the start of the race and the hare like pretends to nap. And from the fable, it's like, yes, he goes to sleep. So you're like, oh, is this it? But then no, he's just joking. And the actual time sink is with the girls. He's like, does a few things, but it's not as snappy. And then that's extended time away from the tortoise and you only get him at like certain points. Yeah, you're right. It could have been more snappy, and I'm interested to see the other one that you're talking about.
Yeah, it's the evolution of timing in cartoons is really fascinating to me because as much as I enjoy a lot of these earlier cartoons, they so often feel so lethargic compared to what Warner Brothers and Tex Avery over at MGM and stuff do in the 40s. It's fascinating, like just the understanding of comedic timing and how to convey speed in cartoons. It just feels like in a lot of ways, it just literally hasn't been figured out yet.
Mm.
And that's fascinating to me that it's just like, it feels just like a thing people don't know how to do yet. But it's something that they're figuring out, and yeah. This is an early example of it. And in this same year, we're going to see Tex Avery finally come to Warner Brothers, and we're also going to compare it to a cartoon he did while at Walter Lantz. And the timing on these two cartoons is crazy different. It's going to be fascinating to watch, because the difference between two cartoons directed by the same person, but animated at different studios by different people with different sensibilities is fascinating.
Yeah.
And that's the same year. Like the animation is a fascinating medium in the 30s, especially just for how much it evolves over the course of 10 years.
Yeah. Keeping the momentum of a short versus just bits and bits and bits where they're all kind of separate things rather than building on each other versus like, yes, trying to tell a story, but But again, like keeping that momentum.
Let's go on to our favorites and least favorites. What was your least favorite part of the cartoon?
I think probably the kind of beginning part where, yes, they're setting the scene, but there's nothing quite as interesting to focus on. It's a lot of info there, and you see, like, the bird with something broken, but it wasn't as engaging.
I think for me, it's when the hare first meets the girls, young girls, just because there was a little bit of, you know, wasn't sure where that was going, and with them, you know, appearing younger than they sounded and all of that.
I think I'm going to say the finale, in that the cutting back and forth between Turtle and Hare, I guess I wanted a little more dynamicness there between them. It kind of just felt like cutting back and forth between the same little bit of animation, and like that works, like that gets the job done, but it feels like it could have been more interesting and could have been cutting back and forth and seeing them really feeling like they were increasingly trying more and more and more and culminating in the thing, rather than kind of feeling like it's cutting back and forth until it ends. What was your favorite moment in the cartoon? It's a really small little moment, but I think one of my favorite bits is when the hare is about to play tennis with himself, and he just kind of like steps on the tennis thing to like knock it and the ball up into the air, and it just like in a way that just feels good. I don't know. I just really, every time that little bit of animation plays, it makes me happy.
Yeah, no, it's interesting how the racket is on the ball, not leaning, because he did that with the bat where it was leaning, and it makes sense.
It's like he pushes it into the ball, yes. And like if, and then it like bounces up, and they both go up into his hands. It's, I like it.
No, I remember that scene. I think my favorite scene is probably where the turtle is on his back, and it's like, oh, how's he gonna get out of this one? And he stretches his head to the hat and twirls himself back up.
That's a cute one.
Yeah, and mine is almost that, but I think it's when the tortoise was running the race track, and there were obstacles, like, you know, a branch above and below, like a, and he ducked into his shell to get through it, and just the different things where you pointed out earlier, Valerie, again, where he went inside a shell to fit through something, and yeah I really liked that.
Who was your least favorite character?
The hare, for me. I'm not a fan of the hare.
I mean, yeah, the hare is good at being cocky, but I don't know who else is a character in this besides the tortoise and the hare,
the tortoise, and the girls. Yeah, I don't think the crowd or even the starter guys really. You could maybe say the starter guy, but like, he's barely a character.
Part of why I say the hare too is I just wasn't that even a fan really of his design. I don't know. I just didn't like how he looked. Didn't like his face. No, I'm just kidding.
What a hater. I'm going to say the girls. They're just like things that make the plot go rather than really characters. And the thing that makes the plot go is just like a pretty vapid example of girls vaguely liking guy and him performing for them, which is like fine enough, but it doesn't make them very interesting.
Yeah, I guess I'll agree with the girls, but I will say I was glad that they were, like, also inviting the tortoise.
Yeah.
So allowing for a little more characterization there where he's, like, no, like, serious about what he's doing.
Yes.
Like, not this time. I'm literally in the middle of a race.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, I got stuff I gotta do.
But thank you.
Yeah.
Who's your favorite character?
Tortoise for me.
What a surprise.
He's cute in his little bowler hat.
Yeah, I guess I'll agree with Tortoise.
I like the hare. He's a cocky jerk. I enjoy the villains. You know that. He's just the most dynamic character in here. And so he's fun to watch. Like, dynamic on an animation level. Let's go on to our overall consensus and what we would rate it.
I'll recommend it. Learning, like, how it is innovative adds a little more appreciation to it for sure. Again, it's really hard for me to watch it within context. Even though we're like going in chronological order, like it's hard not to pull all the other animation that I've seen and realize like, oh, maybe this is the first time I've seen that in this context. So recommend it. And I will give it a I think 3.5 for like the innovation, but knowing that it is, you know, the start of it, not the peak of it. So allowing for growth, and the pacing of the short wasn't, you know, quite on point. Yeah, I'm kind of leaning between 3.25 or 3.5, but I guess I'll go with 3.5.
Yeah, actually, that's exactly where I wanted to go. So I would recommend it. 3.5, and primarily for me, the 3.5 is the innovation. Them even doing some, I don't know, improvement, or made the story, the classic story of the tortoise and the hare, a little bit more interesting, in especially with what the hare was doing as opposed to just sleeping and things like that. So yeah, 3.5.
And I'll give it a 3 without giving it the technical innovation bump, just based purely on how much I enjoy it. Yeah, perfectly good little cartoon. Thank you all very much for listening.
Thank you.
And next time, we will finally be getting to the introduction of the first Looney Tunes and Merry Melodies star that we still recognize today.
Porky Pig. Or no.
We'll see. Join us then.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been How's It Hold Up with Danica Juarez and Jan James. You can find our podcast on Twitter at How's It Hold Up Pod. That's with each word capitalized and no apostrophe. Also, if you'd like to support us, we have a Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/user?u=279-0566. Every little bit helps, and even with a minimum pledge, you get access to things you won't hear in our main podcast feed. Check it out for more info. The two pieces of music used in this episode were created by Kevin MacLeod. You can find both The Curtain Rises and Cool Cats at incomptech.com. That's incomptech.com. Both songs were licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. More info on that can be found at http://creativecommons.org/licenses/by/3.0. Thanks for listening!